Hi, I'm Dana Stevens, Slate's movie critic, and I'm here with a Slate spoiler special on The American, the new Anton Corbijn film starring George Clooney. Here in the Slate studio with me is Mr. John Swansburg. Hi, John.
Hey, good to be here.
We haven't done a spoiler in a while.
I know. It's good to be back.
I'm very delighted to be doing this one with you in particular. And also, I want to apologize to listeners. There's some work being done in the building where our studio is, so you may hear some random rumblings and drillings in the background, which actually are sort of suitable to the movie we're talking about,
yes,
given that there's a lot of machining.
Right. Don't worry. There are no assassins on our trail, as far as we know.
George Clooney's not sharpening a bullet in the background. So, The American, Anton Corbijn. All right, quick reaction, first of all. Was it better than you expected, worse than you expected?
I have to say I didn't really know what to expect. I didn't know very much about this movie. I really liked it. Throughout the movie, I kept thinking to myself, I'm really enjoying this. Maybe in part because there are long stretches of this movie where you are invited to contemplate how you're feeling about the movie. It's not the movie that I think either of us thought it was based on the cursory knowledge of the movie that we had. Is that right?
Yeah, I think that would be safe to say. I mean, I hadn't actually seen the trailer. You and I just watched the trailer and we were laughing because it basically takes the three action scenes from the movie and makes it look like the whole movie is this super tense, suspenseful shoot 'em up.
Right.
And which would be a natural thing to expect anyway from a late summer George Clooney spy release, right?
You're
sort of expecting something noisy and fun and possibly good, possibly not. The last thing I would have thought was that it would be this incredibly spare, austere, almost silent. It felt at times sort of like an Antonioni movie or something. I mean,
really
I don't think
did.
It had those kind of artistic ambitions, nor did it achieve them if it did have them, but it had that kind of empty space.
Right. There's a lot of long shots of the architecture of the small Italian village where Clooney is living for most of the movie. There's lots of shots of his Fiat winding through the roads, connecting that village to another village, and sort of loving shots of the Italian countryside where he goes to try out the weapon that he's building.
I mean, and framed in a really unusual way. I mean, having just seen Eat, Pray, Love, which has these very postcardy golden shots of the Italian countryside, or I guess more of Rome, this is a completely different eye on Italy.
Mm-hmm.
It's much more I wouldn't quite say painterly. He actually used to be a photographer, Anton Corbijn. This is only his second movie. And you can see that photographer's eye in the way he frames things. Actually, interestingly, the cover that George Clooney's character uses also is to tell everyone that he's a travel photographer.
Right. He's not so convincing on that count, I thought.
So we should definitely summarize the story. I was just saying I was particularly delighted to spoil this one because this movie really is going to be hard to write about in review form without spoiling, because essentially it kicks off with a huge unexpected twist. So you want to talk us through that?
Sure. So we start in this sort of snowy Scandinavian-looking space, and George Clooney seems like he's just made love to a beautiful woman who's lying naked on some kind of fur rug.
An unusual day for George Clooney.
Yeah, surely. They go out for a sort of post-coital stroll on like a snowy snowscape, and all of a sudden they sort of are walking back to the house and they notice some footprints, and lo and behold, some kind of assassin has located George Clooney's character, whose name is Jack, and they start being shot at by this person who's dressed up in snow camo, and Clooney fires back and kills his would-be killer, and then sends his paramour back to the house to get to call the police. She takes about five steps, and then he shoots her right in the back of the head, executioner style. And it's not clear at all whether she was part of the conspiracy to get him or not. He just sort of shoots her with sort of sight unseen. And then
the credits begin, basically.
I think
there's one more little bit before the credits begin.
Well, he goes and meets with his handler, and then the credits begin. But we don't really know, A, who Jack is, B, whether this snow camo guy is after him, or C, whether the woman deserved to die at all. And really, we kind of never know the answers to those questions in this movie. I mean, we can kind of glean that Jack is a sort of very well-trained killer and also crafter of killing weapons, and he has a handler who's sort of an older fellow who he communicates with via payphone. But
we never know. There's never a moment where sort of plot-wise, the camera pulls out and shows us, oh, well, it's actually this international organization of assassins. Or there's not any big picture moment like that, which is clearly deliberate. It's not a question of sloppy plotting.
Right.
And I think it's kind of an interesting gambit. I mean, it does leave you scratching your head at the end a little bit, sort of saying, so what was all this about?
Yeah.
Exactly.
I mean, it's entirely possible he's works for the CIA, right? I mean, he could be or is like a sort of loosely affiliated with an American intelligence operation. He could be entirely freelance. He could just be a mercenary assassin. He could be some kind of, involved in some kind of criminal enterprise, international criminal enterprise. You really have no idea, right?
And the movie lets you wonder about it and figure it out very slowly over a long period of time. I mean, I have to say, I think a lot of people who go to this movie are going to be severely disappointed by it if what they're expecting is the kind of movie that we were talking about at the beginning. But if you, as we were saying we did, enjoy seeing George Clooney work away at a lathe, be a gun machinist in total silence for long scenes, which is pretty fascinating.
Yeah, you'll totally like it. And I actually think one of the things that's kind of brilliant about this movie and almost subversive is that not only does this movie not have that many action scenes, I mean, it does have a few and they're well blocked and they're exciting. But not only is there not much action, but Clooney's assignment in this movie that he gets from his handler is not to kill someone, which is kind of crazy. His assignment is to build a gun out of sort of a series of spare parts that he collects via a mail order and a local raiding the local mechanics shop, build this gun to very exacting specifications for another assassin. So there are, this time you would think the movie would spend kind of setting him up where he's sort of finding the mark and figure out how he's going to take the best shot at that person and sort of trying out different scenarios. Really, it's just replaced by scenes of him working a drill, working the lathe, looking down the sight lines of a piece of metal to see if it'll be good to for this gun that he's building. It's very strange.
So in addition to sitting alone in his very spare hotel room machining gun parts, George Clooney also somewhat mingles with some of the locals in this town, although his handler has specifically told him that he should lay very low and not talk to anyone.
Right.
This is kind of a classic Western structure in a way, where a stranger comes to town, right? Nobody knows what he's doing there. Everyone's a little suspicious. And then he starts to make these connections with some of the people in the town.
Right. So, yeah, so he meets two important people. One is and this also sort of fits with the Western idea. One is a priest who sort of takes an interest in him and seems somewhat interested in he's sort of a nosy priest, but he also seems legitimately, I think, interested in sort of saving Clooney's soul. He kind of, I think, senses that this character of Jack is a very deeply troubled man and is not the man he says he is. And I think he's at once curious and compassionate. And it turns out the priest has a sort of secret of his own that we learn about later. But that's sort of not much explored. The priest sort of flits in and out of the plot and is not that important. The more important local character is a prostitute named Clara who if the Abruzzo region of Italy offers prostitutes of this beauty, I think it's soon to become a hotspot vacation.
Yeah, she has that dewiness that only a movie prostitute can have.
Yeah, yeah.
But she's kind of a good character, I have to say. I mean, given how incredibly hackneyed it is that, she would be the prostitute with a heart of gold who actually falls in love with a client. I mean, that is not a cringe-inducing subplot at all.
No, it's not. And there's a great sex scene between Jack and Clara that's sort of unlike any prostitute sex scene that I can remember seeing on film.
And it's one of those nice European sex scenes, too, where it's not incredibly graphic. It's, there's some toplessness. It's a little more graphic than, an American movie equivalent might be.
Right.
But I really like a sex scene where the story is advanced from the things that the people are doing together in bed, I mean,
right.
In other words, there's more being signified than just they are having sex and it's hot, right?
Exactly.
I mean, it's sort of like their intimacy is increasing throughout the scene.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And Clooney is very interested in providing pleasure to the prostitute as well as receiving pleasure. I mean, I think that's part of what's surprising. And it's shot really well. Like, you can see you're kind of gleaning what's going on mostly by looking at Clara's face. But you can tell, like, you have a very good sense of what's happening. And it's interesting. And it's charged. And I think you're right. It does advance the plot. And it gives you a sense of, for much of the movie, Clooney plays Jack as having this completely blank look on his face. And that scene kind of gives you a sense that he's not just a cipher, that he's a passionate man. And in fact, his Achilles heel as an assassin seems to be that he needs companionship, particularly the companionship of a woman. That's sort of what I think we're supposed to learn from that opening scene, that somehow, I don't think that the woman he kills in the first scene has actually betrayed him, but in some way he sort of shacked up with a woman and let his guard down, and that's, I think, in his own mind, that's why he feels this guy was able to creep up on him. But I think he feels guilty for having murdered that woman. He wants female companionship, and it's a hard thing to want in his line of work.
Right, and Clooney gets that across pretty well, I think. I mean, I feel like this movie is a good bulwark against people who would argue that George Clooney just does one thing and he's just the cute Danny Ocean guy all the time. I mean, this is a very typical Clooney part in the sense that he's this hyper competent, handsome, sort of suave guy.
Right.
But it has a lot of cracks in it, a lot more cracks than some of his bigger blockbuster roles let show through. And I think he handles that super well.
And he's not really suave, is he? I mean, his only love interest is a woman who he starts out paying for her services, and we never see him really charming her. They do have one sort of dinner out that the prostitute Clara wants to see him in a sort of venue other than the whorehouse, and she sort of suggests his dinner out at a local restaurant. And you kind of might expect that scene to be the one where we see the Rat Pack Clooney kind of working his charms, but he seems actually very out of sorts, as you would imagine an assassin who lives in the shadows would be, sitting at a white tablecloth local establishment. It's not romantic really at all. It's a well played scene. It's interesting, but it's not the Clooney of Out of Sight, wooing Jennifer Lopez.
Yeah, I was impressed that he chose this role because it's a stretch for him, but it's a subtle stretch. You know,
right.
It's not like taking a big hammy Oscar-y non Clooney esque role. It's more like taking that persona and tweaking it in a small way.
Right, and this is a point that you made last night as we walked out. I think it was a smart move on the part of Corbin to cast Clooney because, frankly, I mean, I was very content watching these long scenes of Clooney working the lathe, but I'm not sure that there are that many actors who I'd want to watch work the lathe for that long. I mean, he's such a magnetic presence. He's such a good-looking guy. He's really thin in this movie, and he's often walking around in sort of tank tops, and he's always doing push-ups and pull-ups, and that's probably part and parcel with being an assassin. You have to have be in good physical fitness. He sort of looks striking, and that helps the movie in its long, quiet stretches. You don't mind just sort of being sort of fly on the wall in his little assassin's lair. If this had been Brendan Fraser starring in the movie, I think I might have gotten bored. No offense to Brendan Fraser.
A lug and a lathe.
Yeah.
I'm glad you mentioned that about how George Clooney looks, because I really hope that was a choice he made for this character and that that's just not George Clooney's new physique. Because if it is, he's getting a little bit on the anorexic side.
Yeah,
I feel like he's
lean.
A guy who needs a little bit more meat on his bones than that.
Yeah, I suspect he did it for the role, but I don't know. It's a good question. Now, while we're on the topic of his body, we should maybe discuss the tattoo that he has on the back of his neck.
Oh, yeah, because the pull-ups are also a good opportunity to repeatedly see this little butterfly tattoo that he has on the back of his neck. And we've said so many nice things about this movie, but now we're getting into some territory that I think really doesn't work, which is this ongoing butterfly theme throughout the movie. So he has a butterfly tattoo. We don't know why. At one point, we see him reading in his hotel room, and he's reading a book about butterflies, never explained. And then people start to call him Signor Farfalle, Mr. Butterfly.
Right.
How does that nickname begin in the town exactly? I guess because of the tattoo?
I think it is because I think Clara sees the tattoo and therefore comes up with the Mr. Butterfly nickname. And he does. He seems to be an amateur or maybe not an amateur lepidopterist. I mean, he also – there's a scene where so he's building this gun for this other assassin who turns out to be a woman, a quite attractive one. And the sort of cover that he comes up with for showing her the prototype of the weapon is that he's taking her on a sort of romantic picnic. So they have this kind of pantomime of a romantic picnic, which is a kind of provides for a fun scene. He even brings chilled wine to the picnic even though he has no intention of drinking it. The female assassin says, "Oh, you even chilled the wine." And he says, "Well, you know, the Italian police, they wouldn't have bought it if the wine hadn't been chilled," which is actually one of the only, moments of comic levity in the movie, but like a well-timed one and was legitimately funny. So they go on this sort of idol. It's sort of a fake idol. When she's sort of lying down on the picnic blanket, as he's packing the weapon back up into the picnic basket, a butterfly alights on her arm, and he sort of says, "Don't move." And he identifies the butterfly as being some, endangered species, and then it sort of lingers on her arm, her sweater for a second, and then takes wing, and the camera kind of follows it into the sky in this meaningful way, although I don't know what's the meaning is. Do you?
Well, I mean, I think the main purpose, I don't know exactly what the director's trying to get across as far as meaning, except that, it's the one spot of beauty. I mean, I think it's basically supposed to be, it's so corny, but I think it's supposed to be sort of his spirit, the part of him that isn't this beaten down, soulless assassin, like his soul.
But the last time
we see the butterfly is the most cringeful of all. And I think it is the most cringeful because it's been so heavily set up by these other butterfly references.
Right.
So now let's just spoil the end when things get really Sergio Leone, like full on Western toward the end.
But should we mention that there lest anyone think that the Sergio Leone thing is something we're just making up. At one point, Clooney is in a cafe where a bunch of Italians are watching a Sergio Leone movie. Although I wasn't able to identify it. It wasn't one of the Man with No Name
movies. Yeah, I didn't recognize the image either. I mean, it was clearly one of those, you know, dusty streets.
It was a spaghetti
Sergio
western,
Leone.
Yeah, but it wasn't. I didn't immediately seem clear to me which one it was. But that is. I think Corbett has said that he was thinking of those movies as he made this one. So that's very much there. And it does have a sort of climactic ending. Do you want to do the honors? Or?
Well, let me see how it all comes together. Actually, all the violence kind of comes in one big spurt at the end. So
right.
So Clara is begging Jack, that's the character's name, right?
Right.
To stay in this small town or to take him with her back to the U.S. And he's saying, no, I can't. I have to go. Right. Then there's a moment that they meet up in some kind of a procession outside. And he, not knowing that he's being stalked, but we know it at this point by the female assassin that he sold the gun to.
Oh,
right?
But I think he does know he's being stalked. So we need to go back a step because he decides before the procession that he is done. He doesn't want to be an assassin anymore. He wants to go away with his prostitute girlfriend and live a life of quiet
butterfly
observation. So he calls his handler and says, I will make the drop on this gun. I will provide the gun to this assassin, but then I'm out. And he's been suspicious of his handler all along, I think. I think he's been suspicious that his handler is actually doesn't have his best interests in mind. And so then he provides the gun. He's packing to provide the gun to his fellow assassin. But do you remember there's like a brief moment where he sort of reconsiders and reopens the briefcase that the gun was in, and he pulls out the sort of stem of the gun, and we don't really see what he does with it. But ultimately, and here we're getting into real spoiler territory, when the moment comes when the assassin – it turns out the assassin, he's basically been building the gun that is going to be used to kill him, if that makes sense. You know, he's delivering this gun to an assassin, and her assignment becomes kill Jack because Jack wants out, and you can never get out if you're an assassin. So the female assassin goes to kill Jack, and the gun backfires in some way that kills her. Now my interpretation of that was that Jack had realized that what he was doing was delivering up the weapon that would be used to eliminate his own life, and had therefore flipped some switch, turned some screw, and engineered that backfiring.
Oh, I can't believe I missed such a huge plot point. You're totally right. You are totally right. I had just assumed that some third person was killing her. Since we don't know, you know, who's after who in this movie, and the movie's not particularly interested in showing us how the conspiracy works or how far up it goes.
Right.
I just thought some third person, who at the time I thought was maybe the handler, had picked her off. And then actually things started happening so fast after that I stopped even worrying about who killed her and was
right.
Kind of just looking at what was going to happen to him. But you're right. He made the gun backfire so that it takes out her eye. She dies in this horrible way.
Right.
And as she's lying dying in this Italian street, he comes and tries to get the name from her of the person who
she works for.
Right.
And she reveals, I work for the same person you do.
Right.
Which I think he kind of already had guessed, but now he has confirmation of that essentially the jig is up. You know, his handler, who knows everything about him, is trying to get him. And in the meantime, the handler has come to the same little town and is actually trying to kill him, and they have a sort of very kind of Sergio Leone shootout where they kind of both shoot each other at the same time, and Clooney, Jack's shots, you know, sort of kill the handler almost immediately. Jack is wounded in the abdomen somewhere and is slowly bleeding to death, but he gets into a car and he's told Clara to flee town and meet him at the picnic spot, his favorite picnic spot.
Butterfly Junction.
Butterfly Junction. And so the sort of last shot of the movie is Clooney driving while bleeding in this Fiat to Butterfly Junction. And he kind of gets there just as his life is expiring and sees Clara sort of standing in the sort of hazy sunlight by the river where they've picnicked before.
And then she runs to the car, and then the camera tilts up really slowly up through the trees. And then here's where I think the movie really did lose me in the last few seconds,
yep.
Is that you have this long shot of a white butterfly mounting up through the trees,
right.
Which is so out of keeping of the mood of the whole movie. I mean, with the exception of this butterfly theme that keeps getting hammered at us, I feel like the movie's pretty subtle and pretty quiet in the points that it's trying to make. In fact, it's not even trying to make a heck of a lot of points.
It's incredibly quiet.
And then along comes this really Catholic, heavy-handed, you know, it might as well be a Disney animated butterfly flying up through the trees.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost surely a CGI butterfly at the very least. And that's the last thing we see. I mean, I guess the only other time where I think the movie sort of veered slightly towards the heavy-handed is there are a couple scenes where Jack is having conversations with this priest about sort of the future of his soul and the nature of man and God that are a little bit, they're a little bit much, but I like the priest, and those conversations didn't last too long. They felt like they could have been actual conversations,
right,
between a sort of country Italian priest and a traveling photographer / assassin / lepidopterist. that butterfly at the end was just like, oh, okay, now his spirit, you know, is ascending towards the heavens, and of course he does have this one moment of recognition where I think he's not sure whether he's going to find Clara there waiting for him. And, you know, as he expires, he sort of sees that there was a woman who was willing to sort of make that commitment to him, to sort of go off with him, who really did love him and trust him.
Yeah.
And that's sort of his dying moment. So in a way, he's sort of redeemed in this way that is probably not the kind of redemption that the priest was prescribing for him, but it's, you know,
it's more like a personal psychological redemption. Like,
right,
somebody got through to him. And that actually kind of happens in the procession, right? I mean, the emotional climax of the movie happens in the procession when he agrees to take her to the U.S. and he says, "Ti amo." And Clooney's really good in that scene, actually. I mean, it's a scene that could easily have been super hokey, but he's been so good at being incredibly restrained and repressed through the entire movie that the idea that he's smiling and saying, "I love you, you can come with me," is pretty great.
Right. And the thing that's really too bad about the butterfly is that actually the last scene, like it would have been kind of good without the butterfly, right? If you just were left with that moment of him reaches a bloody hand out towards the windshield as if to try to grasp Clara in the moment that he expires, and you know it's not the subtlest ending scene of all time. I think it's pretty clear that what's going on there, that there is this kind of redemption, that the woman, he almost got the woman, but in a way he did get her because he sees that she's there for him. Like, that would have been
against redemption. I mean, I'm glad to see that character redeemed. It was that extra hokey symbol for redemption that had to be, you know, ascending through the trees at the last moment that was a little tough to take.
Right.
Really, this movie, I would say overall, is at its best when it doesn't try to do too much or doesn't try to do anything. I mean,
right,
what was sort of welcome about it, you and I both said as we're walking out, like, I feel like my eyes have been scrubbed, you know? I mean, after a whole summer of these loud thrillers that are just constantly full of gunplay and every minute is scored by, you know, Hans Zimmer or something, and you're walking out and this movie has almost no music, right? The moments that it does have music, it's this really beautiful kind of chamber music. I don't know who did the music for the movie, but I think it's super well done.
Really
well done. Precisely because it's so spare.
Yeah.
And it was just relaxing. it was a little bit boring at times, but it was sort of a relief to be bored at the movies.
Yeah, and you were bored in the hands of a story. You were like locked into what was going to happen in the story. I mean, although at a certain point, I think you realize that a whole lot wasn't going to happen.
So you're going to send your friends to it?
I think I would. Yeah, well, certain friends. I think, you know, people who really, you know, want an action-packed picture. You know, I don't know that they would have the patience for this. But anyone who has a soft spot for Clooney, I would send for sure, because I think it's a slightly different role for him, and I think it's really well played. And anyone who likes a thoughtful thriller and has a little bit of patience, I think they'd really enjoy this. And I kind of want to just support Corbin. I mean, I really liked Control, his movie about Joy Division. And this is only his second movie. So just by virtue of boosting his ticket sales, I think I would like to sort of put in a plug for this movie because I think it's really interesting. And, you know, if he made a couple small decisions differently, it could have been that much better. But I really had a blast seeing it.
Yeah, I agree. I will do the same. I'll tell people to go see it. Well, thank you a lot for coming to see it with me, John.
Oh, my pleasure. Anytime.
Our producer is Krishnan Vasudevan. The executive producer of Slate Podcast is Andy Bowers. For Slate.com, I'm Dana Stevens.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.